You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome into a Thursday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. The Nets lose their eighth consecutive game, 13th in 14. I am Gavin Shaw, joined by the effervescent, that's not even a real word, brilliant? No, too generous.
No, I'll go with that.
The it's kindly. Fine. No, that's not accurate. The charismatic.
Yeah, effervescent's a word. I'm not sure what you're saying.
No, I know. I just, like, I mispronounced it. Yeah.
Did you?
I probably should have stuck with it. Anyways, it's me and Josh, Locked On Nets podcast. Charlotte Hornets 111, Brooklyn Nets 96. Again, I think I'm starting to get on the Josh bandwagon about being really annoyed about having no clue when Caris LeVert or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson are coming back, because it is abundantly clear the Nets desperately need both of them. This was another game where they played just fine for three quarters, and then it just kind of fell apart in the fourth.
Yeah, Atkinson, I think, said that he wants both of them back for Monday, so in Nets logic, they should probably only miss another five games or so each.
You know, we'll see him in 2018-19 for sure.
Honestly, what are the chances that we don't see either RHJ or LeVert for the rest of the season?
I think that would be
I feel like it's at least 10-15%.
I think that would be pretty funny, honestly. Like, I'd start to appreciate it if they missed that much time. I'd get kind of into it. Yeah, so similar game. The big thing to note in this one, D'Angelo Russell, I believe, replacing Quincy Acey in the starting lineup. And I definitely liked it. To start the game, I thought they played pretty well, but even more than just from, like, an on the court product, where it clearly didn't really change things one way or another. I just like that they're willing to, like, see how that looks, because that's, I mean, obviously, theoretically, you're gonna have Jeremy Lin back next year, and he's gonna be in that discussion. Maybe you move D'Lo to the bench, maybe you move Dinwiddie to the bench, but I think it's worth finding out what those lineups look like and, like, how well those two can play together over a more significant sample size.
Yeah, no, it's good to get them some run. I think we've been preaching that throughout since D'Lo returned. And obviously after the All-Star break, his minutes are going to ramp up a little bit. So you still want Dinwiddie, who's one of the Nets' better players, to get as much time as he deserves. You're going to need to play them together. Yeah, I didn't really miss having AC in the starting lineup. I mean, he still played 24 minutes, still was abysmal. So I got my dose.
Three. Five rebounds, one assist. What else do you want, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else I could ask for out of our backup forward.
Yeah, that's fair. Speaking of backup forwards, Dante Cunningham had his best game as a Net. A bold prediction, maybe. His
probably
best
career, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, and probably will end up by the end of his career still being his best game as a Net. But give him some credit, 22 points, 12 rebounds, four assists, really shot the three ball well. And it was kind of nice to see, because he just really hasn't been able to get a lot of shots up in any game so far, and you could tell he was just doing all he could to fit in. But he was a little bit more aggressive this one. Dinwiddie in particular did a good job finding him, and he got into a rhythm early, and it just kind of continued throughout. And this game would have been a total blowout if not for his efforts.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good, actually. Besides being very deadly from the corners, I mean, he wasn't afraid to shoot from there. He had some nice drives to the basket and finishing with floaters and mid-range shots. So that's good to see. And definitely a stark contrast to AC, who really can't create off the dribble. And anytime he puts it on the floor and steps inside the three-point line, the possession is basically over. So good to see from Cunningham. I thought he was a pretty good effort level in the defensive end as well. Had a couple plays where guards drove to the basket. He was able to strip them and keep his balance, which was a good sign to see, as someone that can actually move their feet and has the length to really bang inside as well. So he could actually end up being an interesting player for the Nets down the stretch.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think going forward into next offseason, like, we've talked a lot about the Nets improving that stretch four spot and really how hard it is to find an elite guy there. And if you find an elite guy there, like someone like Ryan Anderson, usually they're only a one-way player. So it's a really tough balancing act getting the right guy to slot in that spot. But I think Cunningham, I mean, you know, let's give it a few more games, but it's hard to be a lot worse than Quincy Acey has been this season. So I think if nothing else, the Nets might have found an incremental upgrade at that spot. And right now, it's not really having an effect on wins and losses. But going forward, once you kind of flesh out the roster and you have RJ in there, you have Karras in there, maybe next year you have Jeremy Lin in there with another free agent or draft pick, suddenly I think that small upgrade makes quite a big difference in your rotation.
Well, yeah, the only thing I'll point out is that Quincy Acey last year was a cautionary tale because Nets signed him out of the D-League. I think he played like 30 games for them. Was absolutely on fire from three the whole time he was here. I think he shot 43% from three for the season, and that was actually he cooled down a lot at the end. He was up around 48-50% on threes most of his time with the Nets. Going into this year, everyone's like, okay, AC's going to be a stretch four. He'll be a part of what we do. Definitely don't need to upgrade that backup stretch four spot. And then this year, we all know what happened. So cautionary tale to that these guys at the end of the season have a few games or so. You need to have them prove it for the course of an entire season.
No, I definitely agree with you. But I guess my counter argument to that would be Cunningham's floor is a little bit higher because I feel like he's a little bit more versatile defensively, and especially on offense where he's not totally relying on three-pointers. We saw him hit that hook shot over Dwight Howard. You mentioned it, a couple nice takes to the basket. He doesn't look totally inept going to the rim in transition. So I think the baseline for Cunningham, and obviously I think he's what, like 30 years old already, like he's not going to get really a lot better than he is now. But I think he's more real as an NBA player than AC ever was, even when he was shooting the three ball really well.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I've criticized AC's defense a lot. I think Cunningham, as you mentioned, more versatile and consistent on that end. But his value is really going to be derived if he can be a respectable three-point shooter.
All right, let's take a minute to pump up the newest sponsor of the Locked On Nets podcast.
Attention, cancer victims. If you or a loved one lived, worked, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the 9/11 attacks and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many families recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The Zaim-Zadroga Health and Compensation Act has been extended, but time is limited. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family. Let him help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but to anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast. Please call 1-800-LAW-HELP. That's 1-800-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify.
To the Locked On Nets podcast, Gavin Shaw, Josh Bass with you. Just finished up talking about Dante Cunningham's dominance. Dante's Inferno, a part of a great Iron Eagle night. I thought that line was my favorite, but he also had Crab guarded by Lamb. Now I'm hungry, which I thought was a gem.
I missed that.
Yeah, this is pretty good. All right.
He's a good one, that Ian.
Yeah, not too bad. Him and Rooks both, I think, up for New York State Emmys for their New York Sports Emmys for their broadcasts. So shout out to those two, especially our boy Rooks, who hopefully will make another appearance on the podcast this summer. And it's crazy. I think Nets just 22 games left. Feels like the season just started, but they stuffed so many in pre-All-Star break. We actually have four days until they take on the Chicago Bulls on Monday. Back to this one. I don't know. I didn't really have like a million thoughts on this one. It's tough when a team loses 13 and 14 and is plagued by a lot of the same issues, like namely just like a lack of depth. But Kenny Atkinson, I think he did the same thing against the Pacers, going with kind of a tight 8-man rotation. Josh, I know in general you've been pro Whitehead playing more. Would you want to see him and Stauskas out there? Do you like Atkinson down the stretch, kind of tightening the group of guys he's playing?
Yeah, I mean, it was fine in this one because I think anyone they were playing at the 1 and 2 spot, whether it be D'Angelo Russell, Dinwiddie, Crabbe, and Harris, had deserved their spot out there. So I thought the rotation was fine. And obviously, once RHJ and LeVert come back, what I would hope to see is that those two come in the rotation, AC's out, and then you're moving forward with a 9-man rotation. Thoughts on that?
No, I agree with you, but I hate to tell you, I think Kenny Atkinson, I really think Quincy Acey saved his life at some point, and we're not going to hear about it. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but I do agree with you. And I guess to give Atkinson the benefit of the doubt there, he hasn't had Dante Cunningham in that slot all year. So maybe if Cunningham keeps playing well, and you could maybe justify playing RHJ at the four a little bit more.
Yeah, tonight AC had to play, so it's fun. But I just can see Atkinson, RHJ, and LeVert come back, and he's like, okay, now is the time where you need to really break out Mozgov and put him in.
Yeah, Mozgov time. And I think, I mean, I know we're just looking ahead to the next 20 games, but I mentioned it earlier. I think, like, assuming they bring back largely the same roster, and that's probably, like, a false assumption, like, odds are, like, one of these guys won't be on the Nets next year via trade or whatever could potentially happen. Yeah. But I'm interested to see how that rotation kind of fleshes out with Jeremy Lin in there next year. And obviously, like, someone like Whitehead remains on the outside looking in. Stauskas remains a deep bench guy. But I wonder who starts out of that guard group. I know that was a big debate going into this season. But, like, which of those three is a sticks man? Like, is Lin the guy who
Lin's not here? Starting. Come on. After the injury he just suffered and the terrible health he's had the last 2 years, they're not going to put him out there for 25 minutes a game.
I mean, maybe like initially, but I mean, like, if he ends up, like, I mean, what was it?
Is he even going to be back at the start of the season? I mean, that injury is pretty brutal.
It was an ACL, right?
No, it was an Achilles.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Oh,
that's bad. I should know that. We give
the best information here.
The best.
It's so long ago that we don't even remember.
The best. It feels like 5 years ago. But yeah, okay, that's fair. Yeah, then he probably won't be starting.
Yeah, and he has to, like, retrain all of his muscles to behave a certain way.
Behave! He screamed at his ankle. Yeah, yeah.
Getting injured. He's teaching the behavioral economics.
Yeah. Stop that!
But I think that what I could see is that they want to give D'Lo the keys at the start of next year. He's playing the one. LeVert's playing the two. Dinwiddie's the main backup off the bench playing 25 minutes a game.
Yeah. No, that... Definitely, it's probably the way it'll go. I don't know. I didn't like. I know D'Lo, like, statistically, like, was probably the Nets' second best player in this one. But, like, again, like, I didn't really love how he played it. And I'm probably overlooking, like, Dinwiddie also shooting really poorly. But it just seems like I don't know. I'm still, like, I'm just really frustrated with D'Lo's shot selection a lot of the times. Like, it's just like three or four times a game. And, like, maybe the reality is that he's just not that great of a perimeter shooter, and I kind of have to get past that in my mind. But, like, he'll just take, like, those, like, off the dribble contested twos, like, in the first, like, 4 or 5 seconds of the shot clock, or, like, a three off the pass where, like, there wasn't really any movement and, like, his defender's still right on him. And like, I like the confidence, but, like, and he was making some of those shots earlier in the year, to his credit, but it just seems like every time he takes one of those shots, I just feel like it inevitably leads to a layup on the other end.
Yeah, and I see your frustration with the shot selection, but at the same time, I don't think he played terribly. And some of the lineups that he was out there with, I mean, when it's him, Joe Harris, Damari Carroll, Cunningham, and AC, like, they need him to create his own shot. So yes, he's not great at creating separation, so a lot of the times it is going to be a force. And there was one play where I think Zeller was guarding him out front, and D'Lo tried to get a step on him, couldn't create separation, had to use his off-arm, and got called for an offensive foul. And you see plays like that, and that's the most frustrating part, because you don't know if he has the explosiveness ever to really be a truly elite player if he can't create that separation.
Yeah, well, that was something I tweeted out during the game tonight. It's something you've pointed out a lot this season, Josh, and I've, like, definitely come to appreciate the point. But I really think, I guess, like, the path to him becoming a great offensive player, and, like, obviously a lot has to change defensively before you could say great all-around player. But I really think he has to become a great shooter, because there is, like, a little bit, like, in the way, like, he weaves his way to the basket and his court vision, there is, like, a little bit of Steve Nash there. But the reason Nash, who, I mean, I think is quicker than Russell is, but also, like, definitely not someone you'd really describe as explosive, the reason he was so effective, and it's the same reason Steph Curry is so effective going to the basket, is, like, you're a lot quicker than you are if you can turn yourself into an elite shooter, and guys have to constantly respect that and play out on you. And obviously that's not even close to reality for D'Lo. And, like, I don't know how many times guys are average shooters their first 3 years in the league and become elite. Like, obviously that's probably, like, a microscopic amount, but the whole emphasis of this Nets team is player development, and it is trying to turn guys into great shooters. So if D'Lo can improve somewhat in that area, I really think that opens up the rest of his game. And I think the margin to which he can improve that, and who knows how high his ceiling is in that category, I really think that's going to define the type of player he is in the NBA. So that's something, obviously not going to change this season, but going to next year, I'm going to be looking out for.
Yeah, and listen, he's not the fastest guy, and he doesn't do himself any favors, because anytime he does get an advantage on someone or a half step, he'll do all these hesitation moves or pull it back, step back, and he just loses that advantage. He neutralizes himself. So he kind of has to realize that maybe when he's going up against a bigger guy, don't try to mess around. Just try to take your man off the dribble and beat him to the spot.
Yeah. And I guess that comes from, I mean, you would think
experience.
Experience for sure. But, like, I mean, I'm saying right now, like, it stems from kind of, like, a lack of confidence because, like, most guards, he can't take off the dribble like that. So even on switches, like, he doesn't necessarily have that, like, intuitive, like, attacking mentality. Like, you see, like, Kemba Walker, who's, like, the total opposite as a player, who's just, like, a jitterbug. Like he doesn't even, like, need a switch. He feels like anytime he gets one-on-one with someone, he's going to go to the rim. And he's someone like D'Lo, who has, like, a really good handle, has, like, a lot of different, like, moves and off moves, but he realizes, like, where his bread is buttered. And, like, when he has a matchup that he likes or he thinks he can go one-on-one, he's aggressive and he just takes advantage of it time after time after time. So maybe a little bit of a learning experience for D'Lo. Outside of that, didn't really have a ton of other thoughts on this game, obviously. Jared Allen didn't really stand much of a chance against Dwight Howard, and those guys are always going to be, like, the worst possible matchups for him, just dudes who are really, really strong. Dwight had a double-double in the first 10 minutes, finished with 15 points, 24 rebounds. So that, I think, immediately was a hole the Nets had to work themselves from, and when they didn't get good shooting from their guards, it just became impossible to win.
Yeah, I mean, Allen's defense was pretty terrible, regardless of whether he was guarding Dwight Howard, Kaminsky, Cody Zeller. Just seemed like he was caught in between. His timing was pretty off. Didn't know whether to go for the block or stay back. And then they were just getting layup after layup whenever they were going at him. So hopefully better nights ahead for young Jared Allen.
Yeah, and I wanted to take a second to remind everyone to follow us on social media. We actually committed to our long-term promise tonight and sort of live-tweeted the game. I live-tweeted it on like a 15-minute delay. So maybe that's just tweeting it. But I'd love to get more fan interaction on those tweets. I know the only one that really generated any momentum is Josh. I'm not sure if you if you saw, but Locked on Hornets tweeted out a sneak tank maneuver by Brooklyn not playing Cunningham, a.k.a. the only guy shooting well much late. And we roasted them a little bit, saying even sneakier, considering the Cavs have their pick. All in good fun, of course. Locked on Hornets responded. They say dress for the job you want, which I thought was pretty good.
Ethered.
Yeah. Oh, God. Season's depressing.
Just win a game, please, for the love of God.
Yeah, I guess that's probably the biggest takeaway. All right, the Nets play the Chicago Bulls on Monday. I can't imagine either of us have a ton of thoughts on that outside of the fact that it's a pretty good opportunity for the Nets to get a win, even though the Bulls are actually playing pretty well right now, and they just dropped a 40-point quarter on the Philadelphia 76ers, and they're up by one with under 5 minutes to go in that one.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if they can't beat the Bulls, then who are we going to beat the rest of the season? I mean, I think if they lose that Bulls game, then over under 4.5 wins the rest of the way, I'd probably go under.
Yeah, it's funny because I know on back in January, like, a lot of Nets beat writers were tweeting out, like, Nets one win away from equaling their total from last year, and it's been over 3 weeks since that happened, and they are still one win away from last season's total. So, and I mean, it's just tough. It's really like a numbers game, and they just don't have enough quality guys right now. They get LeVert back, they get RJ back. Like, I really do think it's feasible that they finish, if not on a 500 run, like very similar to last year, where they go something like 8-13 over their final 21-22 games or so. I mean, you go down the stretch.
They have 3 games against Chicago left the rest of the way.
Yeah, so ideally they they go at least 1-2.
At least 1-2.
Yeah, that'd be nice. They play Orlando. They get
Memphis,
Philly 3 times, and we played Philly well the one time we played them, so that's a pretty substantial sample size. Boston,
Golden State, one game against Golden State.
Okay, that's a dub.
A dub.
Yeah, Cleveland at home. That's easy. All right, maybe I'm gonna say 22 game winning streak to close it out. Third best run in NBA history. All right, for Josh Bass, I am Gavin Shaw. We will be back on. I know, you know, we'll do one over the weekend for you guys. Maybe a futures pod. Or, you know what, Josh, you know what you've wanted to do for a while that I've ignored, and I think we finally have time for it. Let's talk draft prospects.
Yeah, we're going to be previewing DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, Mo Bamba, all the guys the Nets will not be able to get.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. Okay, well, maybe we'll do a draft podcast this weekend, working on a couple things towards getting guests. So hopefully that'll happen soon as well. For now, I'm Gavin Shaw. For Josh Bass, peace out, be well, talk to you guys over the weekend.